Hello people and welcome back to my YouTube channel. I am joined by wonderful guest. As we did say, we're going to bring back Formula One, and we've got the Formula One experts in the house, because I'm not an expert just yet, but you know what, I have to bring it to the channel anyways. We've got Abbas with us. How are you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm not going expert. I'm just going Formula One happy fan. Let's go with happy fan for now. Okay. But nah, I'm blessed, man. I'm all good, man. How are you?
Nah, I'm doing good, man. And Sam, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, man. I don't mind taking the F1 expert, F1 aficionado, whatever you want to call me. Yeah, we're good to chop up with the guys, the man, them, and just, yeah, have our views on the first race of the season and how we see the whole season panning out, to be honest.
Yeah, so obviously we had the race up Bahrain yesterday, because this being recorded on the Monday. Is it Monday? Yeah, it's Monday. Yeah. I don't know, I lost track of time. Yeah, obviously we had the Bahrain Grand Prix yesterday, where it was Red Bull dominance, and we had a surprise podium with, I don't know if it was a surprise, but we had the podium with Alonso, and there was many other stuff that happened in the race. Just first one, before we have a deep dive, did that race pan out the way you expected it to?
It panned out from the way of Red Bull dominating, but in terms of like a lot of wheel-to-wheel action and stuff like that compared to what we saw last year, probably not as much. I know we'll talk about it, but like Leclerc falling out, having the engine issues and stuff like that, that hampered it a bit, because you could have seen an actual battle for... I could say Leclerc could potentially catch Perez just because of the stature of Perez in terms of driving. Verstappen was just too far ahead, and the way he is currently, once he leads, unless there's any sort of issues, he's always going to go clear and you're never going to see him on TV. But the race in itself was a bit of a dull fest, really. Outside of a few little things, a few storylines, it was just a case of Verstappen got clear, Perez clipped his second, and then it was like, yeah, let's see what happens for third. But it kind of panned out in the way from the start. So like I said, once Verstappen took the lead, the fact that Perez was number two in terms of on the grid, you could kind of see it was going to be difficult to overtake one, let alone two Red Bulls. But yeah, again, we have a dud fest.
Look, I didn't watch the race. I was out, but just seeing from the group chat and Twitter and so forth, obviously Max dominated. But to be honest, me, I was being very optimistic, and I was being pessimistic in the terms of like, I was hoping to see Lewis challenge, and from pre-season testing and so forth, we saw the Mercedes wasn't up to par. But I thought, you know what, you know, Lewis, when it comes to race day, he can eke something out in it. And I was a bit disappointed that, look, he came fifth, but yeah, it was just another domination from Max. And we see that at the moment, the last couple of years, Red Bull have had the best car, and they've got their number one driver in the best car, which is set up to, you know, to his abilities and what he's good at doing. So surprising, no, but I would like to just see more entertainment moving forward and see some wall-to-wall action, and seeing someone apart from Perez trying to push Max in terms of having a title challenge.
But just going off that, and just not to be too technical, or we can't be too technical, I was listening to a lot of things about how the Bahrain track is and how it's very harsh on tyres and stuff like that. And Carlos Sainz was saying yesterday, in terms of whenever he tried to fight back, he was just hurting his tyres too much. And then they say the next race in Saudi doesn't affect the tyres as much. And so in regards to tyre degradation, if I said that right, do you think this race was just a one-off and it's going to be more competitive going forward? Or do you think this race is basically what's going to be the season?
I'll quickly jump in if possible. With that, it's race by race, because each race is going to have an advantage or disadvantage to a particular team. Some teams' cars are going to be set up better for particular races. So we can't kind of see this as, oh, this is how the season's going to pan out, where, you know, Verstappen is 30 seconds ahead of his teammate and then 38 seconds ahead of the next opponent's car. So to be honest, I think it might be a one-off, and you just have to go race by race, track by track, and see how the team set up you know, based on each race, because you'll see something different at Monaco, you'll see something different at Texas, you'll see something different at Miami. It's just how your car's set up and what you've kind of, how you've set your car for the season just will be based on the different races and racetracks where they might benefit you.
And to go on your point, I remember like Leclerc, he saved a set of fresh soft tyres, which would have been basically put on, because I think a lot of the people were going for a one-stop strategy, whereas I think Ferrari would have gone for the two-stop, put Leclerc on the freshest soft tyres towards the back end of the race and have that speed. I think Mercedes, I think Lewis even said it on the radio at one point, he goes, do I need to manage these tyres? Because he got put on the mediums and it was a case of, yes, just manage the tyres for now and we'll see where we're at the end. Again, tyre degradation is one of them. I know there's been a lot of issues with them last season as well, where they were just dying out completely and you could see them completely die out. Again, I do think it's a bit on the driver as well. When you're chasing, you will eventually just kill a lot of your tyres. And unfortunately, that's just the way it is. You're going to push more. You're going to kill the tyres more. That's where, in some ways, when you lead from the front, you have that advantage where you control the pace. You don't need to push. The guy behind you needs to push. And then because you've been able to maintain your tyres, you have that opportunity to be able to push on them tyres that are maybe a couple of laps older, but not used as heavy as the person that's basically pushing behind you as well.
And just one quick thing, like kind of... No, I was going to say, just to piggyback off what Abbas said, and also, I don't know where Leclerc was at that time when he was saying about the tyres, and just alluding to what Abbas was saying, you have that fact of, you know, tyre degradation, but then also you have it when you're also defending, being overtaken and stuff like that. So I don't know where he was. I don't know if he was defending hard so he doesn't get overtaken. That can also affect it as well when you're trying to keep someone behind you. So you have the pros and cons of if you're in front or if you're behind and you're defending, etc.
Okay, so I'm just going to speak about the because obviously the top three teams, or it even looks like it might be a top four team thing now. Mercedes, I think Toto Wolff came out and said that this has been one of the worst race days that he's ever had, because I mean they lost out to Alonso yesterday. They were struggling to keep pace and close the distance on Sainz, even though he was in DRS lap after lap after lap. Do you think this could be the downfall of Mercedes, where they start getting drawn into a midfield battle, or do you think they can still continue to upgrade to the point where as in they can close the gap to the front runners?
So it's interesting you say that, because they questioned Toto and they said, are you going to bring upgrades in Imola? And he goes, for us to be competitive, we can't wait that long. We need to find something now. So again, it's a thing. Christian Horner said it as well. But Toto's in a position he has never been in since he's been at Mercedes, where he's now being, he has to catch up rather than being the front runner and being the main guy. The problem with Mercedes is, again, Sam, you've said it before, when it comes to changes in the rules and regulations, one team will tend to always be ahead because the team before is so invested currently in the regulations and so ahead that they don't actually have time to make the modifications towards that season or going forward. Whereas I think Red Bull obviously did that. Aston Martin, I mean, it's like a nice story. Let's see where they go. Because I know you even, I think Richard, you might have even tweeted about it. Where's this Aston Martin pace, I think, in qualifying or something like that? I think it was you or someone else.
I was talking about Alpine.
But for me, like, I look at Mercedes and I think they might go on a little bit of regression. I don't think it'll be a midfield battle. I think it'll be a case of, depending on how strong Aston Martin are, it'll be like a battle for second rather than just sitting back. Because even last year, Ferrari with their issues, and then everyone was saying towards the second half of the season, or Mercedes can potentially get, well, the final third, I'll say, Mercedes can potentially get second place in the constructors and stuff. But I think, based off what's been said, I know we'll talk about it a bit more, it doesn't look like any of them at Mercedes have any faith whatsoever that they can challenge for the driver's title or even the constructors right now.
Yeah, and I think that sometimes...
I know, because I was just going to say 100%, because obviously I'm not a mechanic, but then you can see the like aerodynamics of each car and how they're different. So it terms like basically affects how fast the car will go, the how the wind passes through the car. And you can see that Mercedes seems to have gone in a different direction from most of the teams, but a lot of the teams seem to have covered Red Bull, copied Red Bull. But then obviously Mercedes are Mercedes. They want to do it their own way and make sure it goes their own way. But then you see Hamilton at the end of the race saying there's so much more work to do, this and that. And even George Russell as well, like he lacks so much confidence in the car, talking about how Red Bull are gonna run away every single race and all that kind of stuff. It just doesn't seem like it's a team filled with confidence that they can actually, with their current philosophy, can actually get back to the top. Do you agree?
It's difficult. In terms of just going back to your previous question, I don't think they'll be in a midfield battle. I think they'll still be fighting for second or third, because at the end of the day, they're the Mercedes Works team. So they've got the same engine as Aston Martin, and they're going to be able to add upgrades first to their car before they give it to their the suppliers, isn't it? But then also, when it comes to that situation where you're the Works team, you've got the engine, which, you know, you've seen Aston Martin in it and it's performed well. On your end, that means your chassis isn't up to par in regards to what you need to do. So that's where they have to make changes with that, and then obviously do some mods and upgrades to the car. To be honest,
I think it's funny you said that, because Toto even said that at the end. He goes, "Aston have our engine, so we might need to look at what they've done and have a little jiggle about that, because if they can perform, there's no reason why we shouldn't." But yeah, Mercedes.
Don't McLaren have Mercedes engine as well?
I believe so.
Let's not talk about McLaren. Boy, McLaren stunk it up. Like, I'm sorry, Zach Brown, Lando Norris. Is it Piastri that came and he was meant to go to Williams last year, and he did? Was it Williams or was it Alpine?
No, it was Alpine. The Alpine and thing were fighting out.
Turned around and said, "No, I'm not going there," or something like. That
his steering wheel died on him yesterday or something, you know, like that.
The only person that's probably, and I don't think it's in his character, but he might have just laughed to himself a bit, it's probably Ricardo a bit thinking,
yeah.
I told you it wasn't me. But just switching over to Ferrari, because given the way they started last season and given the way they started this season, it's on totally different last season they finished 1-2. Leclerc, I think he got first place, and then Max Verstappen, he had a DNF, Sergio Perez DNF, and it's just crazy to see how it's come back to this season. Do you think Ferrari are still a team that will be able to push Red Bull come further down the season?
I don't know, man, because last season we saw a lot of the issues with Ferrari came down to reliability, and they had the same issue yesterday as well. Yeah, and strategy, exactly. And we've just seen in the past that, you know, there's always been the pace there. They've had the drivers, but there's something in terms of, like you said, reliability and strategy that hasn't just been in sync. And yes, they're going to have opportunities where they might win a race, but are they going to be serial contenders in terms of, you know, pushing Red Bull week in, week out? I don't think we're going to have that this season. I think it's going to be a variety of teams. It could be Mercedes 1 week. It could be Aston Martin the following week. And then a week after that, it could be Ferrari. So it's going to be, you know, it's going to be by committee that everyone's going to try and stop Red Bull. So where do I see Ferrari going? They've got two great drivers that I like, Leclerc and Sainz. But do I see them doing anything special? Everyone's been hoping for, you know, the prancing horse to do something for the last 5-6 years, and we're still waiting, you know. Alonso tried, Vettel tried, and nothing has come to prevail. So I'm not really expecting much from Ferrari, to be honest.
You know what, I'm kind of echoing that, but also this is going to sound weird, I don't think there's a fear factor. I think everyone's kind of in a way, like how George Russell made his comment, I think people, based off the first race, for some reason are resigned to the fact that this is a Red Bull season in terms of the constructors, and even to a point the championship with Max Verstappen, because I don't know, I know the Mercedes gap was about 50 and 55 seconds. Sainz wouldn't have been as much, but it wouldn't have been anything close. Like I said, it is a thing of reliability. You can't, in a strategy where I think you were going for a two-stop as well, by putting the softs on Leclerc and finding a way to get your way through traffic and stuff like that and saving them softs, it backfired because the car just messed up. Again, like I said, when we've got this thing in F1, and it's hard when you introduce it to new fans and you're like, you need to watch it. Yeah. When they start watching it and you see that one team just completely dominate and they're like, where's that season that we saw on Drive to Survive with Lewis and thingy? And I say,
what's happened? Yeah.
It's an anomaly. That season was a one-off type of thing. Realistically, yeah, it has been for the longest since I've been watching. One team dominates and then the rest try to do what they can, but they get resigned to losing. I think Ferrari, even though they will never say it and they'll always believe it, you see it when in the paddock when they have the pre-race interviews and they're like, okay, where do you see you can fit? And they're like, the Red Bulls are too strong in this particular track, so we'll fit below. And then it's just a case of, okay, how many more races are you going to continue to say that? But first things first, you just need to hit pole. Get what I would say, 1-3. So have Verstappen trapped in between your drivers and see what you can do from there. Because the second you allow Verstappen to be pole or even have a 1-2 with Red Bull, they can play the strategy game and it's long for any team.
Wait, just quick one before we go on to Aston Martin. Because you mentioned something about how, like, you've seen teams concede to the fact that Red Bull are the best. And it's something that I've realised ever since I started watching Formula 1 that I do not see in any other sports. How realistic and how transparent the drivers are. Like, obviously, we're not talking about football, but let's just say, for example, United start the season and they come out and start talking about, and there's no way we can compete with Man City. United fans will come out and say, like, what kind of mentality is that? This is not, you get where I'm coming from. Do you think sometimes it hurts the team within to be like, before the season even kicks off, already start admitting defeat? Or is it because it's so car dependent?
Yeah, I think it's that, but it's also an element of realism. Like, you know yourself when you start the season where you want to position yourself in terms of just the constructors, because a lot of people still don't know. Constructors is the one that gets you the money. The drivers money. Cares about. So you know yourself where you need to pigeon yourself in that constructors to be able to fund yourself for the next season. Whereas when it comes to football, like you said, I think it's also more football have a lot more fans. Whereas here, yeah, it's more strategic. Yeah. F1 is highly strategic when it comes to the actual race. And I think teams already know that going into it, where we need to be. And then just try to get that expectation and that'll be a good season for them.
Yeah, and kind of piggybacking off what Abbas said, it's very different where you have football, which is a very loyal fan base, and each team that comes into F1 has a different strategy of why they've come in. So for example, Ferrari, this is their marketing tool. Like, Ferrari don't market their cars. They use F1 to market their cars and that's how they built their brand. For example, Mercedes will come into F1 just to say, look, we've got enough money to show you that we can dominate, but it's also to test certain stuff that's going to go into real life cars within Formula One. And you can use that as a case study saying, look, we've got new technology for seatbelts, et cetera, et cetera. And then also you look at it as it's free advertising. So example, if you was to, you know, want to advertise in all these countries at F1 racing, it would cost you billions. But to run an F1 team, it costs you like 300 million. And then the return on investment that you get, especially if you're, you know, in wheel-to-wheel action, you get more airtime, yeah, you're probably going to get equivalent to 2 billion worth of free ad time when you're only spending 300 million. So it's really different. And I think, like Abbas said, it's about being a realist. Okay, cool. We've gone into the season. We had the first race. Our objectives were here. And we've had this first race. We've kind of come back to reality. We know where we are, and let's not lie to our fans. We'll just say, look, at the moment, we're going to struggle. We hope to get to halfway in the season where we can kind of, we're not too far off Red Bull. And then during the summer holidays, we can make some changes and still compete. And I think that's the real thing, the sick thing about F1. You see everything there and then. Like, you interview the drivers while they're about to get in their car. You interview the team principals, yeah, while they're on the track. While they're trying to make a strategy, they're having a conversation with Toto Wolff or Christian Horner. So it's very different. It's more like NFL in terms of how they kind of communicate with the team. it's there and then. It's not, okay, let's wait to after the fact to see what's going on. So it's real-time relationships that they're building and conversations they're having.
You know, it's funny you said that, because it is more related to American sports. Like, so, for example, like a basketball team, if they make the playoffs, that's a success for that team, because the expectation was, let's just get in playoffs and we'll be good. Whereas, like, you look at someone like Williams, for example, if they can just get somewhere on the constructors outside of last and the paddock, for them, that'll be a success type of thing. So, obviously, some teams want to tank, and F1's the only team sport where you don't want to tank because you get nothing from it. But yeah, I guess you can liken it to a team who makes the playoffs and you're like, that's a good season for us. Let's just see what we can do. F1's kind of similar in that way. Haas is probably the best example, because if they push above their weight, it's a success. But then when they drop back to where they should be, it's like, okay, cool. You guys, you had your little fun.
100%. I just going on to the final cut, Aston Martin, because given the build-up of like Formula One throughout the whole test and whatever, I won't lie, the race was a bit underwhelming. But one guy that did give us entertainment, I think, was Alonso, with the overtake on Hamilton and the overtake on Sainz as well. And I think I was thinking, like, yeah, this is what I've been waiting to see. What because the fight, especially one with Hamilton, when he caught Hamilton napping on, was it turn 11? I don't know all the turns, but I think it was turn 11 when he went down the inside and said that's not really an overtaking thing. How motive, because Alonso has only been on the podium once since he left, was it McLaren or Ferrari or something like that? So
yeah, I've been podium for years, man. He took a retirement, did came back and
went to McLaren. Is that McLaren? So yeah, probably since probably Ferrari. I don't know if I can't remember if he got a podium at McLaren, but it would have been Ferrari or McLaren his last podium, to be honest.
Yeah. Where do you see this Aston Martin team going? Because as I said, coming into the season before tests and starting, when Alonso decided to leave Alpine to go to Aston Martin, I think a lot of people were like, what kind of decision is that? Alpine are the fourth fastest car on the grid, Aston Martin are sixth. And because even slightly, one of the reasons you could argue Vettel left was because he probably knew he wouldn't have a chance to compete for a championship again. So from going to a car that's the fourth best to the sixth best, and then you can see they were like the second quickest car on the thing, what is the ceiling, or how far do you think this Alpine Aston Martin team can go?
Sam?
With me, look, there's always been high expectations on Aston Martin just because of the cachet they have with the partnership with Aston Martin, and then obviously Lawrence Stroll, that's invested a lot of money and he's a billionaire. He paid for the seat for his son to be at Williams, and then took him, bought Force India, and then had his own team. And there's always been that expectation that if these guys have the right people behind them, the right tech guys, the right strategy guys, the right drivers, there's something that you can kind of get out of that car, because they're using a Mercedes engine, which is top two or top three. So they've got a great engine, they've got money behind them, so they can build a team that can kind of compete against, you know, the McLarens and the middle packs, the Alpines and so forth. So I think they're probably going to be the dark horses, and especially having Alonso as a driver, he always flourishes in these type of situations. And we know what type of talent he is as a driver. So you put him in a good car, there's going to be races where he's going to step up and he's going to surprise people and finish on the podium, you know, more than you've ever seen him in the last couple of years. So I would say if you take out the top three, they're top of the pack. That's the team that everyone's going to watch out for and say, do you know what? Not necessarily Lance Stroll, but Alonso in a car that can compete and a driver like that, then you've always got a chance to have an upset. And he's going to be the next driver that when the top six drivers are having issues or reliability or they have a DNF, they're going to say, can he win a race in that car?
You know what? I think I might be wrong, but don't quote me fully on it. I think they even took some of Red Bull's guys to Aston Martin. So that already shows that they had people there who can work on the car, who have come from a championship winning team. What I'll say about Aston Martin is, like, Alonso's good when Alonso's winning. Like, you hear them radio messages like, this is the best car. He was happy, but that comes from two things, because I still remember him last year, or even where he was just sat just in that deck chair because he knew the car was bad. He did not care. So Alonso's, when it's going good for Alonso, it's going very good for him and he's happy. But the second it switches and Stroll starts getting certain results above him and stuff like that, if that happens, he's not going to be as happy. But also, he's celebrating the podium one, but two, because he went wheel-to-wheel with Lewis and he beat him.
That's what he likes.
Yeah.
He likes that because everybody knows, no matter what they talk about, he does not like Lewis like that. So it's just one of them where everything is right for him, plus also his teammate. Like, if you check the radio, he goes, "Where's Stroll at?" So he got an idea that, okay, cool, I've got still a few more gaps on Stroll, so I'm still the A guy, I'm still this, even though he's quote-unquote playing the teammate role. But really, he wants to make sure that he beats Stroll, one in the head-to-heads, and two, remains relatively competitive. Because once Aston Martin finish 9 and 10th, for example, it's not going to be one of them things that you're going to hear happy messages. It's going to be like, yeah, this wasn't it, this wasn't it. Or if they miss out on Q3 for whatever reason and stuff like that. Right now, it's happy, but Alonso's not one of them guys that you can just sit with and think it's going to be a happy sailing thing. Saying that, I can't lie, if Vettel's watching that, he's probably thinking, I mean, as much as I retired, I'm happy with retirement, because he's...
I could do that.
Why was I not there? Like, I think I could have challenged Perez so much. Because I can't lie, Vettel, for me, is a better driver than Alonso, even though a lot of people...
That's a tough one. Because not in a bad way, we've seen... Vettel win his championship with Red Bull, and at that time they were the best cars, but we've seen Alonso win it back to back with Renault without the biggest budget, not necessarily the best car, and he was managing that car and managing those expectations, and he delivered. So don't get me wrong, I rate Vettel a lot and I respect what he did, but I just think in terms of those two, it's a toss up. I think a lot it'll be 50-50 off. 51-49 in terms of who people go with.
Even with Max, with what he does at Red Bull, because he can eclipse or match Vettel's titles. When I used to watch Vettel, I was like, do you know what? Like, nobody's touching. He's completing the hat trick, whether he wants to. Whether he wants to give Mark Webber a shot, he's not even letting you do that. Like, he had that certain killer mentality that Verstappen's showing to a point here, I think. But that's why I give him the edge over Alonso personally.
And one thing about Verstappen and Max, those two, because obviously they're the same team that they're racing for. Vettel and Max. It's very difficult because, one, when Vettel was racing, there was maybe probably five less races. So that's an issue there. But then also, the setup of the car now is tailored a lot to Max in terms of how he drives and how aggressive he is. And that's why you see, in having the same car, Perez can't compete, because the way Max's car is set up is to benefit him and how he races. Whereas you see Perez is more of a guy that he likes to be in the back seat, defending, using his tires, going on long stints, whereas Max is aggressive, and that's how the car is, and he can thrive in that scenario, in that situation. If the cars were equal, I think it would be more competitive in terms of where they're at.
It would be competitive, but right now, I know people will say about how I'm living in the moment, but I do think there's a bit of youth on Max's side, obviously. I think he's the best driver on the track. He's better than, like, Lewis, Charles, Fernando, stuff like that. I think Max right now, cars put to one side, I think he's, for me, the better driver out of everyone as well.
Because even last season, there was time he finished, started 10th and 12th on the grid, and he was still able to go on and win the race. I mean, even though he still had a very quick car, I think...
That's what I'm saying, that's based on the car, though.
Yeah, I 100% agree, but what I'm saying is that... Because I think during those times as well, especially last season, if you just talk about over one lap, not so about race pace, Ferrari was still hanging in with Red Bull like throughout the whole season. And if you start 12th on the grid and you're able to still go on and win the race, I do think... that sometimes it's just to do it more than the car, and it also comes with talent as well to be able to
go. Yeah, but if we go back to when Mercedes were winning, we'd seen Lewis do that as well. And that's, yes, Lewis is a great driver, but you've got the car and the machinery to outpace everyone. So, like, the article, this is the guy was saying, this isn't to throw shade at anyone at Red Bull Racing or Max or anything, honestly, but the car is set up in a unique way that is built around the lead driver, and that's Max. And look, I totally get why. This is from Alex Albon. He's like, I mean, when it's all said and done, he might be the greatest driver of all time, but he has a very distinct style of driving, and he likes his car set up a certain way, and that's hard for a lot of drivers to sync up with. Of course, you can tinker and tweak your own car, but just the Red Bull in general is suited to Max's style. So how the car set up is there to help Max in terms of his style, and that's what you can see, because you've got the same, you've got two drivers that are supposedly in the same car, and there's always a crazy gap. Like, you can't have the same machinery and there's a 13 second gap. Make it make sense.
Now, I agree with you. Just quick last point on the Aston Martin, because during qualifying, when Alonso finished fifth on the grid, it felt like a disappointment because everybody just expected more. And I think it's also to do with the excitement of a new team coming near the front and stuff. So I said, when everyone was talking about during testing how they're matching Ferrari's pace, how they're this and that, Alonso keeps talking about how we were the second quickest car yesterday and blah, blah, blah. Is it a realistic expectation to think that this Aston Martin team can actually finish second in the Constructors?
No, I'm just leave it as that. No,
I don't think it can, because you've got one elite driver, or kind of elite driver to your point, in Alonso, but then the other side, you've got Stroll, who is a bit unreliable. Like, they even went wheel to wheel with each other. Like, if you're doing that, there's a certain level where they'd have to give instructions to one particular driver, like, you back off, you got to give him way. And I don't think Aston Martin are there yet. Similarly to like how Ferrari wasn't there to fully compete with Red Bull, they were just trying their best. I think Aston Martin's going to have one of them seasons where they're going to try, but like I said, once it starts going bad, mark my words, you're not going to get this happy Alonso, like, no worry guys, next time type of thing. He's going to be mad.
No, Assam, what do you think? Actually, you said no anyways. No,
I said no, because I just don't see it. I don't see them having the longevity to do that continuously. And like Abbas was saying, you got Lance Stroll that's very inconsistent, and I don't see him as a quality driver. At the end of the day,
he's paid his dad.
Exactly, he's paid his dues, but he's only there because of his dad. So if they had another driver, just say maybe, I don't know, just say it was Ricciardo or whoever that may be that can actually get points and be consistent, I'd say, okay, cool, maybe they've got a chance of not being second, but finishing the top three or four. Yeah, but second, I still think Mercedes and Ferrari will fix up and, you know, be able to dominate, especially Mercedes being the works car. They would hate to be, beaten by a supplier. It just looks crazy.
You know, that would remind me of Red Bull and who was it? Was it
Honda?
No, Ricardo made the move and he was outperforming Red Bull at the time or something like that. I can't.
Yeah, with the Honda car, yeah. It just looked crazy.
Yeah, I remember that. What is this? Yeah.
They don't want to do that. So I think Mercedes are going to fix up and pattern up their car. And yeah, just hopefully we just get a great season, because that's one thing where a lot of the fans tail off, where it's not competitive enough and you just tune in and you already know who's going to win. You don't want to see that. Yeah. Like, as much as, yeah, people are going to say, I'm a Lewis Hamilton fan. When Lewis Hamilton was doing it, I wasn't saying nothing. But you still want to have races where it's wheel-to-wheel, you're seeing the best go at it, and we're seeing, okay, who prevails and who's the best driver on that day. And at the moment, we're not seeing that, you know? So hopefully they can fix some stuff up, man.
No, I 100% agree. That is all we do have time for today. As I said, it's more like a Bahrain review, so we'll probably be back after the Saudi race to cover that race and whatever new news comes out in Formula One. Thank you guys for jumping on once again. I really do appreciate it. You want to shout out your social medias for whoever watches, whoever's watching, or yeah.
I never remember my own, you know. It's literally just my name, Abbas Yunus, and 3 underscores on Twitter. If you follow me, you can follow me. If you don't, honestly, it's up to you. I'm not forcing you. There's nothing entertaining on there, but you might as well.
You must follow me by force.
By force. No, and on my end, just follow us on Undiluted Media _ on Instagram, Undiluted Media 1 on Twitter. and Undiluted Media on YouTube, man.
No, and just check me out on all the social media, @outofbounds_UK on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter, YouTube, which you can probably then find my own personal pages as well. But yeah, that is all we do have time for today. Make sure you like, share, subscribe, all the good YouTube stuff. And until next time, thank you for watching.